And our special guest tonight, Billy Carson. We're going to take calls with Billy in a moment. His website, ForbiddenKnowledge.com, linked up at CoastToCoastAM.com. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Billy Carson. Billy, of all the subjects that you've handled in your career, which one really excites you?
Well, really say it's the ancient civilizations, because I can really see a connection to the advanced technology that we have today.
These ancient civilizations, I'm convinced, possessed high technology.
Yes. No doubt about it.
What happened to it? Where did it go?
Well, I believe just by looking at a lot of the architecture that was left behind, looking at the, for example, the pyramids of the world, you see all the apexes have been removed on the majority of the pyramids. And the interior, there's pieces missing. So it seems as if they've purposefully taken apart some of the technology so that we wouldn't be able to use it or other people wouldn't be able to access it. Even things like Göbekli Tepe, which were buried by sand from 400 miles away, and all the other buried temples and pyramids that are laying around. Even on Giza, they found another 200 buried pyramids there. So for some reason or another, they decided to strip the technology out, bury it, and whatever else was left behind probably rusted out or just turned back to dust.
They're saying today that Stonehenge might be 2 million years old. How could those people have moved those blocks?
Yeah, you know, I really think that those blocks were not picked up with by giants. Some people think giants moved them. I just really believe that giants may have been involved, but I do think that they found a way to levitate these giant stones. There's been places that I've been, I've taken my regular old-fashioned compass to, And you get next to some of these stones, and you start to see the needle move from north and start spinning around a little bit, and you realize that the atomic structure has been altered in some type of way.
If you could get into a time machine, would you go forward or back, first of all?
I think I would go backwards.
And if you went backwards, yeah. What time period would you go back to? What would you want to be a witness to?
I'd want to be a witness to prior to the first big global flood. I'd like to go back beyond that to the time when the Sumerians claimed to have had these rulers that ruled for thousands of years, tens of thousands of years. We're talking about the Sumerian kings list, where some of these people ruled for 28,000 years, 14,000 years. I'd like to go back to that period of time so I can just see this is prior to them enslaving mankind. So I'd like to see exactly what they were doing, what they were up to, what types of technology they had, just to be able to witness, you know, this and the construction techniques they were building themselves without the aid of humans initially prior to the first flood.
Let's take some calls here for you, Billy. You ready?
Yep.
All right. First time caller. Let's go to Jim in Redding, California. Welcome to the show. Hi, Jim.
Hey, thanks for taking the call, George. I got some good stuff for you guys. Billy, congratulations on your life path. Wow.
Thank you.
What a deal. I've got, real quick, George, 1996. I'm up in Olympia, Washington.
Okay.
And to prove all what Billy's saying here, and as far as colonization of other planets, I'm standing on the golf course hole. I look up to my east. I see a star, and the damn thing wobbled. Okay, in 2 seconds, that was down in front of me, maybe 100 yards, turned into a triangle, same little thing, maybe 50, 60, not a big one, and flew off towards Mount Olympia. The second one I got for you, August of 1997, with my wife, I'd watched this stuff for years, guys, this is true stuff. So we're in Canoga Park, Woodland Hills area, in the valley down there.
Know it well.
Sitting on a tennis court, so we're watching the usual stuff. Like I said, I've done this for years. True stuff, guys. So along comes Urban Boulevard, things flying east, about a 500-foot triangle turns and does a show pass just like the Thunderbirds or the Blue Angels that you see. The bottom of this craft was just gorgeous. You're looking at the pods were, I'm talking about the power pods now, we looked like a gas burner on low. Three of them. And off it went, probably about a 8-10 second setting off towards LAX, and disappeared.
We get so many reports of an object that looks like that, Billy. Some police officers near Millstadt, Illinois, years ago, near St. Louis. Same thing. Huge, triangular-shaped object. I mean, and some people theorized it's ours. I don't think so. Right. What do you think?
I think there's a combination of ours and theirs. I think that we've copied, you know, we meaning the military industrial complex has copied what they may have seen or maybe tracked or maybe in some way discovered or found maybe in one of these areas like Antarctica or somewhere else where they've been looking for evidence of ancient advanced technology. I think we copied the craft. We had the Delta Wing and the Swept Wing that came out of nowhere back in the 60s. You know, we had the SR-71 Blackbird way back then. And so they started building it back then in the 60s and started flying it in the 70s. So I think that it's something that we've literally copied and that we've got two of these. There could be UFOs that have this same particular shape, this delta shape. And now we probably copied that same. So we said, look, they're doing it. Maybe it's an efficient design for traveling in atmospheres and also maybe even leaving the atmosphere. And so we probably copied it. So there's a combination of ours and theirs. And over the years, over the decades, I'm pretty sure our technology has gotten much, much better. It may be almost impossible to distinguish between the two right now.
And Jim, thanks for sharing your stories with us. Fascinating indeed. Next up, we go to Joe in Long Island, New York, east of the Rockies. Hey, Joseph.
Yeah, hi, Billy. Two related questions. First, it's amazing that you can read these manuscripts and all these different ancient texts and languages. But if you look at ancient healing techniques, for example, in the Bible, it talks about Naaman dipping seven times into the water under the instructions of the prophet and was healed of leprosy. That's the Jordan River near where Jacob had his dream about the ascending and descending to heaven. And then the Egyptians took people out into the sun that had broken legs, and the sun would help to heal them. Mm-hmm. Did you find anything in these ancient texts along the lines of healing that was lost in translation that we don't use today? And my second question relates to that. The pre-flood and people supposedly were more intelligent due to more oxygen. They lived longer. There was better plants, better nutrients. Is there anything to suggest that, in fact, they were much smarter than we were?
Okay. Two great questions. Thank you so much. In terms of the healing, there's some texts in the Naturu and the Egyptian Book of the Dead that led me to the Temple of Dendera in Egypt. And so I went out to the Temple of Dendera about a 4.5 mile through the desert, and I get there, and there's this narrow passageway with these gigantic megalithic magnetized granite walls. And you're supposed to take sick people there, and sick people would come there for tens of thousands of years. But that place is a lot older than the mainstream will tell you. And they walk down this narrow hall, putting both hands along the magnetized granite. Now, let me give you an idea how many people have done this and how long it's been.
Okay.
Solid magnetized granite has finger lines like waves on an ocean going down the hallway as people, so many thousands of people over so many thousands of years have put their hands on this and created grooves into solid granite to walk down that hallway to get healed by the magnetized granite in this particular temple. That's amazing. And so that's one of the, you know, just one of many. And then in terms of the knowledge and the wisdom, there's a couple things. It definitely better oxygen, cleaner air, less pollution, probably almost zero pollution. Much better food to eat because everything was organic, non-GMO. We had nutrients in the soil back then, and we're probably getting a lot closer to a lot of the volcanic soil, which had a lot of nutrients in it. And then the rivers and the waters were so clean and crisp that everything was just so pure. So that also created for a lot more of a healthier person. Another thing that we find, if you go to the look at some of these mummies, they have these elongated skulls, the Egyptian mummies. Now, their skulls elongated, in my opinion, due to skull binding, because skull binding narrows the back of the skull. The ones that I've seen, the skulls were expanded at the back and not narrowed, and it looked like they had more, a bigger brain case, which means they probably had slightly larger brain.
They were born that way, weren't they, Billy?
Yeah, they were born that way for sure, which means that they probably had a lot more intelligence. And they were distinguishable. This record, the account of these people with these larger heads goes back thousands of years in ancient texts, and they're distinguishable. Even though the face is the face of what we call a human or humanoid, they were distinguishable between the people because of their heads, and so they were called angels. So it's pretty interesting stuff.
We're with Billy Carson, folks. His website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Where do we get your books, Billy?
You can go to forbiddenknowledge.com with the number 4, or you can go to amazon.com and just type in Billy Carson, and my books will pop right up.
Super. Let's go to Louise in Louisville, Kentucky. Hello, Louise.
George, thank you for accepting my call. You told me last week that Billy would be on tonight. Yeah. I've been waiting all week to...
I know what you're going to talk about. Go ahead.
Yes, ancient Egypt. I want to talk about ancient Egypt. I want to ask Billy about Hannibal of Carthage, who defeated Scipio during the Second Battle of Punic in 218 B.C. Hannibal came up he crossed Spain, and then he went to France, and then he went up to the Alps and crossed down the Alps and went into Italy, and he defeated Scipio with his elephants. Then the Third Punic War, he lost, and the Romans sowed salt into Carthage, and people were not able to grow food. My question for Billy is, Scipio received the name Africanus. Was he the first Roman to be called Africanus?
Scipio? Scipio was the first Roman to be called Africanus. Now, this story is really, this is a real good history lesson, actually.
By the way, let me tell you, Billy, before you answer, why she knows so much about this.
Yeah.
She claims to be the reincarnated Cleopatra.
Knows
more about that region than anybody I've ever heard. Go ahead.
Wow, incredible. Well, I figured that with the passion that she was talking, that she probably was had the energies of one of the incarnations of these people.
Huh.
And so it's an amazing story, because Hannibal and what he did, in terms of trying to take over, really rule everything, and then all of a sudden he ran into Rome, and then Rome obviously wanted to rule everything. We've run into these empires that want to rule. But I do believe that, according to what I've read so far, is that Scipio was the first Africanus, or called the first Africanus. And, it goes also, that whole story leads into an overthrowing of Egypt. And Egypt would then, at that point, had been overthrown, I think, 3 times. And after that, was overthrown another 4 times.
Hannibal was born back in the B.C. area, and... unlike Hannibal Lecter, he was something else, wasn't he?
Yeah. Very powerful guy. Matter of fact, I think most of the DNA goes back to this gentleman on the planet. I think he sired a lot of children.
Spencer's with us in Los Angeles. Welcome to the show. Hi, Spence. Go ahead.
Good evening, gentlemen. I just wanted to start by thanking you, George, for taking my call. Been a longtime listener.
Thank you.
And Billy for inspiring me to speak and express my ability of claircognizance online under the alias Junk DNA. And nice. I just want to give you a little background. I currently work with thousands aiding the elevation of their consciousness and continue to work with those himself in the pursuit of unifying the collective.
Good for you.
And my question for Billy is that I wanted to ask you about the hidden mysteries of the Sphinx and its hollows, including the opening at the top of the head. Why have they concealed these entrances, and what exactly lies within?
Fantastic question. Thanks for hopping on this call. It's interesting you bring that up, because I'm going to be inside of the Sphinx in 2.5 weeks.
Really?
Inside. Yeah.
You got to call us, Billy, and let us know what it's like.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to take a lot. I'm shooting a lot of 4K video. I'm doing this for my TV network, Forbidden Knowledge TV. And I'm doing a whole new series on ancient civilizations. And
cool.
I got the Sphinx. I got the Giza Plateau all to myself. And I'll tell you what, the top, there's a door on the top of the head. So there's this famous ancient Egyptian papyrus, which I have a copy of the papyrus, because you can't hold on to the original, where you see a UFO with Thoth in it landing on the back of the Sphinx. There's several depictions of this object taking off from the back of the Sphinx and also landing on the back of the Sphinx. The Sphinx was a landing place, kind of like a helipad in a way, for this object. He would get out and he would go into the door on the top of the head of the Sphinx and then walk down a winding staircase down into the Sphinx itself. And then he would come out of another door that you can't, probably hardly anybody's ever seen, between the chest, in the, you know, right in the center of the chest, between the paws, and then he would walk out there to greet the people and his and everyone else. And so inside the Sphinx, it's actually it's a glorified landing place. It's a place where the gods would walk out of and to greet the people. And then also the Sphinx has chambers deep beneath it. There's been different types of radar scans done now that show that there's something at least almost even a mile deep beneath the Sphinx itself. And there was actually a TV show that was going to come out and air on Discovery Channel many years ago. And it was going to, this real time live, give this sky scan or this ground penetrating radar image of what they found. And then as the show was going live on air, it was canceled.
Oh.
It was actually canceled. Now, what happened now, ironically, about 4 years later, I'm doing a live workshop, and I think it was at Conscious Life Expo or one of those. And one of the people that was the producers for that show was there in the audience, and he gave me his card, and he told me that there's a tunnel that leads down to the Sphinx from out from the opposite side of Giza, and he believed that they had gone down there after this and took whatever it was out of that beneath the Sphinx and took it down through the tunnel away from where any prying eyes could see, and it's never going to be seen, and nobody will ever know what it was.
You know, Edgar Cayce said that at the base of the Sphinx is one of the three areas that he has had the Hall of Records are kept.
Yeah, and in the Emerald Tablets of Thoth, he says that beneath the Sphinx, deep beneath the Sphinx, he hit a spaceship, and he said that far in the future, an enemy will come from deep space, and that the smart person who can unlock or release his ship from beneath the Sphinx will be able to defeat them with ease.
Jeez. That's exciting stuff, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's real Star Wars type stuff. Crazy.
What do you think of the age-old saying that the ETs cannot get involved in our direction?
Right, right, yeah. It's like they have these protocols that they follow. You know, it was even mentioned by Hellier before he passed away that there's a federation of these people and that they have rules not to interfere, you know, with developing civilizations. I believe it might be true because I remember in the Sumerian tablets, there's a couple of tablets where these Anunnaki people were talking about what they were doing on this planet and how they were what they were doing with people, us. And they were saying that they would have to pay the price for this. And that when the creator of all finds out what they've done here, they're going to have to pay the price. So there may be somebody that they even answered to, and they knew they were kind of out of line and going against these protocols, and they felt that some of them felt that they would get in big trouble for what they've done on this planet and other planets. So it's pretty interesting. You know, there could be this this protocol of non-interference. So to speak.
Billy, we're going to come back and take final calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, Karen A. Dahlman joins us as we talk about spirit guides and Ouija boards, so make sure you're part of the program. We're going to come back in a moment with Billy Carson and take final phone calls with him as well. And we're back with our final segment with Billy Carson, George Norrie with you. A couple of his books we're talking about, The Compendium of the Emerald Tablets and Woke Doesn't Mean Broke. And believe me, folks, that's a great book, and it's huge. It is huge, and it's got a little picture of Billy floating in the air. How'd they get you to do that, Billy?
Well, the artist had sent me a couple of renderings for the cover that they came up with. I didn't resonate with me, and I said, I want to be on the cover. So I sat in front of a green screen in my kitchen. I just popped up a green screen and put a tripod with a phone, took a photo of myself, doing that look,
that look, yeah.
Zen look. and sent that to them, and then they doctored it up and made it look real nice.
Let's go to final calls. Thomas in La Jolla, California. Hey, Tom, go ahead.
Hi, George. Thank you for accepting my call. Billy, you are such an inspiration to the Coast audience. It's always a pleasure to hear your interviews. You've suggested that there is a secret space program and possibly even a breakaway civilization on Mars that we are supplying. And it seems logical to me, just my opinion, that we would also have a secret formal relations with extraterrestrial civilizations that would include trade, commerce, perhaps, an exchange of ambassadors, etc. And I was wondering what your perspective was on that.
I believe you're right on point. I believe that's exactly what I believe. Yeah, I don't talk about it that much because I'm not asked about it that much. And sometimes it's really considered maybe a fringe topic. But it's really, truly what I believe. I believe that we are in collusion and communication with beings. I think even that there are people on the moon. I've got the black box audio from the Apollo 11, from the Freedom of Information Act, where you can clearly hear Neil say, I bet the people down there never get out, talking about one of the dome structures that they saw on the moon. It's in one of the documentaries that I'm in as well, that audio. And I just believe that they're in collusion, that they've been in negotiations, talks. Maybe there is some supply and some trade, some type of a time scale release of information where there's this exchange of knowledge, or maybe they're just watching to see how we can advance without becoming a warring race in space before they even open up to us completely. So I think you hit it on the head in that we are probably trading ambassadors and things. That Gary McKinnon case from a few years ago,
yep,
when he had hacked into the NASA computers, I think he was accurate when he said he saw these records of non-terrestrial officers and so forth. I think it's all real.
That's what he was looking for, and he's still on the lam, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. Yeah, absolutely.
Let's go to Barbara in Lakeland, Florida. Welcome to the show. Hi, Barb. Go ahead.
Thank you, George, for taking my call.
Thank you.
Billy, yes, Tom in California was right. Inspiration. Two things that you've talked about that I want to comment on. What you said about the homeless is something that so many people don't understand, that difficult times happen to people, that events happen through no fault of their own. I was in North Carolina and did freelance work in the movie industry. It's a little hard to have unless you're in California, it's a little hard to have community in such situations.
Sure.
So when I get injured on the job, that's what eventually happened as a single person. And but people in general just don't understand. So what you said was very, very poignant. But getting back to ancient civilizations, something that's been on my mind recently is this, how the Bible gets misinterpreted frequently. And so the first book of the first verse of Genesis, when it talks about in the beginning, God created, and I've started thinking, sometimes we don't ask enough questions, and I've been thinking, in the beginning of what? So, but I've been inspired by what you have said about seeking out these various civilizations, the Aborigines in Australia. Tomorrow's an ancient aliens marathon, so I'll be glued to that. But I think you being able to get out and talking to these people, you get a lot more information than I've seen so far on ancient aliens. And I'm wanting to know how you go about creating that opportunity, especially since I'm sure there are sometimes language differences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question. So I always have guides. I like to get homegrown guides, homegrown archaeologists. And if I need to, I get a translator, somebody else from the area that can help translate and help me speak any different languages, break down the language barrier. And those people now, those guides and those people that I've hired as translators and so forth, they've all become really, really good, longtime friends of mine now. And so, I've really established some beautiful relationships with people all around the world. And as a matter of fact, because of those relationships, I've been able to send other people to those people to go out and have some of the same experiences or similar experiences that I've been able to do. And how I funded my travel, I've spent to date over $250,000 in travel. And I've done that by funding it using my own businesses. I had no sponsors, no golden spoon, you know, no inheritance from my parents, which have both passed away. I got nothing. I literally did it from running my own businesses and sacrificing things like clubbing, drinking, smoking. Those alone will give you enough money if you can invest it right.
That's right.
Whatever you want to do. So I've just been really smart with my money and investing into myself and into travel, which I think you can't even put a price point on the experience of travel. So it's the biggest thing that I actually invest in.
You fly a lot, Billy?
Oh, yeah, I fly a lot. I was doing 20 to 25 flights a month before the shutdown. Yeah, a lot. My biggest month was 28 flights in 1 month and 31 days.
Have you ever come across any unruly passengers?
Oh, yeah.
You've
the
seen
last
that?
Flight that I was on, I videotaped that. They had to come home with cops and take the guy off. He was really, really nasty, too, because of the stewardess.
People are uptight.
Yeah. There's a lot of mental health issues right now in the world because of what happened. There's a lot of PTSD, a lot of stress, anxiety, and people are really on edge right now.
Yep, they sure are. Let's go west of the Rockies. Tom's with us in Port Angeles, Washington, Port Angeles. Welcome to the show, Tom. Go ahead.
Well, thank you for taking my call. Perseverance rover.
Mm-hmm.
Had to come down at 17,000 miles an hour, mm-hmm. and that meant that they had to develop a hypersonic parachute. Mm-hmm. And two gentlemen, after seeing that worked at JPL, their names were Daniel Charpenter and Tobias Vander Bent. They make... They had built, and I was a part of this. hang on a second. I'm looking at my notes.
Oh, okay.
They made bumper chutes. Geez. What's the name of that thing we put up over our heads when it's sunny out?
A canopy.
Yeah, I hate it when things go south, and I can't remember the words. But anyway, they replicated the parachute on an umbrella, and they had to get 500 and of them to go into production, and they're selling those now. So if you want to participate in interplanetary whimsy, this is a fun thing to do. It's a great story. And my question is, you know, when the whoever's that actually, you know, rule Mars and Venus and all that stuff, how do they feel about us doing deep space exploration robotically? And do they have a sense of humor?
Has that ever had any fallback from ETs, Billy, in terms of our exploration?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I really do believe, for example, what we did on the moon, when we crashed, lander into the moon and tried to drop a bomb on the moon, I think that we got warned about that, and which is one of the reasons why I believe we never went back. I believe that the people there communicated with the appropriate people here and came to an agreement about what we were doing there. And I believe that's what ended or halted the Apollo missions. Now, in terms of deep space probes, there's been no evidence, and from what I can see, in terms of anyone being pissed off about them, except for the Phobos 1 and 2. So we've sent out literally hundreds of these probes all over the place. Viking 1 and 2, the most familiar and popular ones. But Phobos 1 and Phobos 2 were launched from Russia. And they were going to Phobos, the moon of Mars, and both of them failed. And the last image sent back before Phobos 2 failed was this gigantic UFO, this shadow of a gigantic UFO, and then it failed. And it's kind of flipped itself out of orbit. So I think that, off its trajectory, rather, but I believe that that was some type of defense system that was activated by the moon Phobos, because Phobos is believed to be a hollow structure, not actually a moon. This is by the major space agencies. Phobos doesn't have enough gravity even to sustain its orbit, and it's losing orbit and will crash into Mars in about maybe a decade and a half or two decades. And they've looked at it and analyzed the surface, and they think it's weapons fire on the surface of that thing, and it might be a giant derelict craft. So
all smashed up, huh?
Yeah, all smashed up. Yeah. So it's pretty interesting. I think that they're looking at us, looking at our race, our civilization, and saying, these people they need to grow up. Right now, we have divide and conquer. My race is better than your race.
Yeah. We're not ready for the club yet, are we, Billy?
We're not ready. We gotta get over this race thing. We gotta get over this politic thing. We have to learn how to love one another, and with unconditional love, respect one another, and take back control of our planet as a unified people on this planet. And then we'll be ready with open arms, or they'll be ready with open arms to greet us and meet us and let us into, bypassing the ambassadors and bypassing this slow drip disclosure system, and really embrace us and give us a chance.
Let's go to John in Charleston, South Carolina, east of the Rockies. Welcome, John. Go ahead, sir.
Good morning, George. Long-time listener.
Thank you.
Billy, I have what modern medicine considers a genetic deformity, and it is actually a DNA difference. It's not an entire human population, but there is a segment of the human population. And I don't want to give out what it is because I'm still doing research and trying to work on some things. But I have a theory that it's actually DNA that was injected, you know, added into the human species, hominid species from Mars.
Interesting. Are medical professionals, are they baffled, John, by your situation?
No, it's common enough nowadays that most doctors would recognize it when they do DNA testing for it, but it's not in the entire population. And when you sit down and read what it does to my body and so forth, and the minerals in my body, and something just told me one day, I basically woke up and they said, you know, that is basically DNA from people that were on Mars.
Interesting. Billy, you ever come across anything like that? We only have a couple minutes left.
Well, I can tell you this. I haven't come across DNA from Mars, but I've come across a scientific study in peer-reviewed documents that show that the human circadian rhythm is more attuned to Mars than Earth. And another account is in the Epic of Atra Hafiz, and also in the Enuma Elish. It talks about people coming from Mars to Earth to go to war against Enki and Enlil. And in order to stop this war, Enki decides to come up with a solution, wherein the solution was to make the hominids on this planet into slaves and make them do the work for these people. These people were called the Ijiji, and they lived on Mars. They were also complaining that they didn't have women, and they would take women with them in order to stop and prevent this coup. And so they were given women to take back to Mars with them, human women. So it's pretty interesting.
We have a fascinating solar system, don't we, Billy?
Oh, man, it's incredible.
If you were to go any place off this planet, where would you go?
I would go straight to Mars right now.
No question about it.
No question. My dream and my goal, my ultimate goal, is to put my feet on Mars at some point before I leave this avatar body.
If Branson or Jeff Bezos had asked you to go up with them, would you have gone?
In a heartbeat. I would go with Branson ahead of everyone else, because Branson has the space plane, less moving parts, no detachment of rockets, and on these types. The more moving parts you have, the higher the risk. I would go with Branson in a heartbeat.
Interesting. Billy, give out your website, if you would, sir.
My website is forbiddenknowledge.com with the number 4, B-I-D-D-E-N, Forbidden Knowledge, and also forbiddenknowledge.tv.
And if people want to watch your shows on Gaia, how do they find you?
They can just go to forbiddenknowledge.com and click on my Gaia link. It'll take them right to the channel with all of my Gaia shows on there, and they can even watch some free shows as well.
I had fun with you on The Secret Door, by the way.
That was great, man. I listened to the replay over and over again. I was laughing my butt off.
All right, my friend. Take care of yourself. Until next time. Billy Carson. Up next, Karen A. Dahlman joins us as we talk about spirit guides and the Ouija board on Coast to Coast. Get ready. And if those of you are a little squeezy about Ouija boards, well, you know what to do.